So at the first two peer conferences, Mark had the very awkward and embarrassing job of having to introduce his own speech. So I thought I'd take the burden away from him today. So what to say about Mark Collett? Where to begin? Well, everybody knows who he is, and I get to work with him every single day, and I have done for the last 2 years. And people often ask me what he's like to work with. And the truth is that it's an absolute privilege to work alongside him. I've never met anybody so dedicated and so hardworking, and somebody who volunteers so much of their own personal time to help other people out. And he also never gives in. He takes so much rubbish, because this job is really tough sometimes, as you've seen this morning. And he always digs his heels in and never gives up. So he is, of course, the leader and the founder of the fastest growing nationalist organisation in the United Kingdom. He's also now a number one bestseller, thanks to Dominic Kennedy. And he has a very special talent for quite literally driving our enemies insane. It is Mr. Mark Collett.
Thank you so much. Today, I want to talk about victory. Because victory is something we all want to achieve. We all want to stand victorious in order to ensure that those who want to see us replaced and displaced never get their twisted way. However, as we all now know, the road to victory is both long and hard. And often, victory seems so very, very far away. And that can be something, for some, that is extremely disheartening. But it's important to remind ourselves at this juncture that victory is not just a simple binary. It is not simply a zero or a one. Victory is something you work towards over a very long period of time. And on the road to the ultimate victory, there are many smaller victories along the way. And this conference itself today is a victory. It is the biggest nationalist conference of its kind this century, and represents a huge turnaround in fortunes that we as a movement have had since the demise of the British National Party in 2010. Now, this isn't the biggest nationalist event ever held. Of course, there were larger street protests and outdoor events, but it is bigger than any like-for-like conference held since the year 2000, and that includes the British National Party's events or any other conferences. 250 nationalists purchased tickets to this event, ensuring that it was sold out months before today. But what made that feat even more remarkable is that today's event was not widely advertised. In fact, despite us having a website to which over 15,000 people have signed up to, we did not email those people about today's events. The event sold out without us having to use our mailing list, and the people here today are made up of our vetted supporters, people who have attended previous events, and people who have expressed an interest in attending previous events. Now, just imagine for one moment how many people we could have at a conference like this if we were allowed to operate freely. Imagine how many people would be here if we had a larger venue and had used our mailing list. Imagine how big these events would be if we could openly advertise them. This event is a victory. Today is a victory. But it's not the big victory. It is not our ultimate aim. But it is a step forward along the road to achieving that ultimate aim. And most importantly, I think we can all agree after what we've been through today, it is a victory in the face of overwhelming adversity that we as nationalists have to endure. But some people out there will watch this speech on Odyssey or BitChute, and they'll be dismissive. Some people will simply state that this is nothing more than political bread and circuses, that such conferences are little more than people preaching to the converted, that they're just entertainment. But I think they're much, much more than that. We take careful effort to ensure that these events are structured so the attendees spend as much time, if not more, networking, meeting old friends, making new friends, as they do listening to speeches. And you've got to remember, this event today and the events that came before it, for someone in this room, it's their first event. It's the first time they've been around the nationalist family, the nationalist community. It's the first time they've been around like-minded people. It's the first time they could come together and celebrate who we are. It's a place we can be ourselves, express our opinions freely, make new friends, and celebrate the achievements of the past year. And now Patriotic Alternative is just over 2 years old. I can proudly say we have a lot to celebrate. We were formed in September 2019 when 100 people attended a sold-out conference not far from here. And since that day, we have achieved more than I could have ever hoped for. In just 2 years, we have built a nationwide structure. We already have groups operating in every region of Great Britain. Every weekend, at least one PA group, usually far more, are busy with some form of activity, whether it's leafleting, whether it's community outreach projects like our litter picks, whether activists are doing banner drops or protests, or whether people are just out socialising with like-minded nationalists, whether they're out hiking, paintballing, or holding dinner events. Every weekend, Patriotic Alternative is busy bringing nationalists together and helping to build and strengthen a national community. And a community that has the interests of the indigenous people of these islands as its primary concern. The fact we operate nationwide on such a scale already, that is a victory. And over the last 2 years, we have hit many other milestones. We began our Indigenous Peoples Day events, an event that became a worldwide phenomenon, where pro-white activists hold up banners and posters proclaiming that white lives matter. In 2020, over 100 of these events took place worldwide. This year, that number grew to over 300. In less than 2 years, Patriotic Alternative has managed to bring people together in every single Western nation behind the same banner and the same rallying cry that we, white people, matter and that we will not tolerate becoming second-class citizens. That is a victory. We have grown our annual camp and our hike. I remember back in 2018, when I first suggested to people that we came off what was then YouTube and started meeting in the real world, that we started engaging in healthy physical activities and that we built a talented team of people. Just 12 people came together for that camp. And this year, over 145 people attended our annual camp in that same village. The growth we have experienced is better than exponential. And the enthusiasm for our events is like something I have never seen before. And I do love those events because I love being outdoors. I love taking part in physical activity. And amongst other things, many of you will know I am a keen runner. And sometimes keen runners such as myself like to test themselves. They train by weighting themselves. They train by dragging tires behind them, or they put on weighted vests and belts. And this is done in order to stress their bodies so they can see what they can achieve under the hardest conditions possible. So when they take those weights off, their body is better conditioned for the strain of a long run in a hard and competitive environment. And right now, I look out upon the good people here and I see some of you thinking, why on earth is he talking about running? And more so, why is he talking about running with weights? Because running with weights is a very good analogy for what we have been doing. Because despite only being formed just over 2 years ago, and despite achieving so much in such a small timescale, we have achieved all of this whilst living under the most tyrannical conditions imposed upon the British people in living memory. And right now, when I say living memory, I think I am being very, very generous, as not even the most tyrannical of medieval kings took away their people's rights to leave their homes, meet their families, or make a living. The COVID tyranny that has been forced upon us by the traitorous Conservative government was designed to break communities. It was designed to split families apart. It was designed to destroy businesses. And it was crafted to prevent community organizations like ours from operating. Yet despite working under that tyranny for 75% of the time we have been in existence, despite this being the first conference we have been able to legally hold in over 18 months, we have endured. But endured may be the wrong word. The word endured might conjure up thoughts of a small bonsai tree clinging to a cliff face, battered by the wind and rain and elements, yet still managing to hold on, yet still managing to cling to precious life. But that's not the right analogy, because we've not just endured. We have not just managed to survive like a small tree on the edge of a cliff. We have flourished and we have blossomed. In the face of the greatest adversity, we have grown at a rate I never thought was possible. And this is a victory. But our explosive growth is not the only victory that we have secured. We have not only won when it comes to building an organization that has attracted record numbers of people to its events and activities. We have won when it comes to spreading our message. One of the greatest victories that we have achieved in these 2 short years is we have completely changed the discourse within the dissident right. When Patriotic Alternative was formed, the dissident right was not ethnocentric. The dissident right was focused on one thing and one thing alone, the issue of Islam. All talk of demographics had been sidelined. Talking about the Great Replacement was taboo, and even using the word white to describe our people was frowned upon. Ethno-nationalism had been eclipsed by civic nationalism. And the best these civic nationalists would do is campaign for some form of restriction on mass immigration or claim that they wanted an Australian-style points-based immigration system. And I, for one, was sick to the back teeth of hearing those meaningless platitudes. But 2 years on from that wonderful day when the founding members of our organisation gathered for the very first time, there has been a complete shift in the political landscape within the dissident right. There is a well-known nationalist organisation in Britain that has been in existence for 10 years. More than 10 years, in fact. And not once in their entire history did they talk about demographics or repatriation. This political organisation now has a new policy. They have now finally updated their website. And the new policy they proudly boast of is one of voluntary paid repatriation. In fact, their new policy is strangely similar to ours. For more than a decade, this organisation has existed. For 10 years, they have campaigned on the single issue of Islam. And just 12 months since the founding of Patriotic Alternative, they had adopted our policy on repatriation and had begun talking about demographics and their wish to ensure that white people remained a supermajority in Britain. But was this just a coincidence? Well, if it was a coincidence, then just wait a minute, because these coincidences just keep on coming. Another UK-based nationalist party did exactly the same thing. Despite this party being founded as a pro-Israel civic nationalist organisation, just months after we formed Patriotic Alternative, this party was caught hastily removing any mention of Israel from its manifesto or website. But even more telling was when this particular party had to wheel out their leader to do a special stream, where she explained in excruciating detail exactly why she was now going to be talking about demographics. And yes, it was because of us. And she even dared to use the word white. This former Labour Party member turned civic nationalist had all of a sudden had a road to Damascus conversion. And she was now talking about ethnicity and demographics and wearing t-shirts with slogans on about it being okay to be white. Now, where did she get that from? In fact, every nationalist party is now clamouring to adopt our talking points. Every new group that pops up is trying to copy our 20-point plan. And they are all talking about ethnicity and demographics. But whilst we sell out conferences and have had hundreds of people attending events, those parties struggle to get more than 20 people in a room together. And even more humiliatingly, they stand in by-elections in the most racially divided parts of this country, and they fail to get a credible vote. In fact, they get fewer people voting for them than we have here in this room today. Make no mistake, this is a victory. Altering the political landscape within the dissident right in such a short period of time, in a period of time where we couldn't even legally meet indoors, is no small feat. It is a monumental achievement. But this achievement is actually more impressive than I am letting on. Because in fact, our influence has gone far beyond the confines of the dissident right. The talk of the Great Replacement is now commonplace, and even the Conservative Party has been forced to talk tough about immigration and have attempted to convince the public that they wish to repatriate foreign criminals and illegal immigrants. Now, we know they are never going to make good on those promises, but the fact they are being forced to discuss our issues is a sign of our strength and growing relevance. And this seismic shift in political discourse isn't just limited to political parties. We have seen the press and the media acknowledging that white Britons will become a minority in their ancestral homelands by the 2060s if things do not change. What was once laughed at and derided as a conspiracy theory is now accepted as the truth and has bled out of our circles into the mainstream. And all of this, all of these incredible achievements are thanks to the tireless work of you, the people sat here in this room today, and many other people like you who couldn't be here. People who have stood up and been counted and helped shift the Overton window in the direction it needed to go. But what do I attribute these successes to? What has won us these victories? Well, two things. And the first of these things is community. Patriotic Alternative is very different to other nationalist parties and groups. We are not a top-down organisation. We are a bottom-up organisation. And what does that mean? It means we are community first. We exist primarily to build a pro-white community. We are not a group that simply exists around a single person or a couple of people. But the best way to explain community first and the bottom-up approach is with an example. At our recent Harvest Festival event, we distributed hundreds of food parcels all over the country to the elderly and vulnerable. And there were numerous events in different cities up and down Britain where our activists took food to those living on the streets. This was a genuine community event. Now let's compare the PA way with the way some other groups operate. Other notable organisations operate in a top-down manner. Had they arranged a Harvest Festival event, one or two of their leading members would have distributed food to a food bank or to the homeless or made a drop-off at an old people's home. This activity would have been filmed, a slick video would have been released, and a begging email would have been sent out about it. But the only way followers of that group would have been able to get involved is if they clicked on the donate button. And just for the record, before we go any further, 2 years on, PA hasn't sent out a single begging letter. A top-down organisation exists for two reasons: to build the profile of its leaders and to solicit donations. A bottom-up organisation exists to build a community and then empowers that community to help others. We specifically asked people not to donate to myself and Laura and PA for Harvest Festival. Instead, we asked our supporters and activists to spend those donations on food parcels. Then we showed people how easily and cheaply those parcels could be made. Rather than enriching those at the top, a community-based organization enriches the community and helps others. And that is the big difference with the bottom-up approach. The net effect of that approach is that far more food gets delivered, that the organization is far more active in far more areas of the country, and that far more people benefit from the event. When we say community first, we mean it. We are serious about our primary goal. We aim to build a pro-white community all over the UK so that when the storm breaks, our people can stand together and form a shield wall. But earlier, I attributed our success to two things, and I have explained the first. But the second is just as important. And the second thing I attribute this success to is the fact that we always tell the truth. We do not hide what we believe. We do not mince our words. And we are completely unapologetic in regards to our love for our people and our willingness to protect those people. Whereas most other nationalist parties spend a large portion of their time on the defensive, grovelling and trying to prove that they are not racist in a vain attempt to appeal to people who will never ever support them, we do not. We grovel for no one. We step out with our heads held high and we speak the truth, and we will never apologize for that. We will never apologize for being who we are. And I have already spoken of the effects of that approach and the way that other nationalist organizations, the media, and even the mainstream political parties have changed what they are speaking about because of us. Because I believe that the truth is the most potent weapon that we have. In fact, the truth is the most potent weapon the world has ever known. And those armed with the truth have always managed to overcome tyrannical regimes which were built on lies. Because to quote a French poet, nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And at this point, some of you may think I am putting too much stock in ideas or the truth. But I want to remind those people of one of the most pivotal moments in the last 100 years, the fall of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was, of course, one of the most tyrannical regimes the world has ever known. Tens of millions of white Christians were murdered under Soviet tyranny, and tens of millions more suffered horrific punishments, were separated from their families, and lost everything they had ever owned and worked for. The Soviet Union, though, was not only tyrannical on a level that is truly hard to comprehend, but it was also the most heavily armed geopolitical force the world has ever known. At its height, it had more men in arms than any other nation. It had three times as many tanks as the United States. And it had a nuclear stockpile that was reportedly larger than the stockpiles of all other nations in the world put together. Yet despite such immense military might and firepower, the Soviet Union fell. And it did not fall to an invading army. It did not fall to a foe that was better armed. The Soviet Union fell to an idea. The Soviet Union fell to the truth. The truth that communism was an evil and failed system of governance that had not freed the working people of Russia and Eastern Europe, but instead had enslaved them, taken away their rights, brutalized them, and murdered them, all upon the altar of equality. But how did the Soviet Union fall? It was not slowly eroded over time. It did not slowly dissolve like a rock bed after years of a river slowly running over it. The Soviet Union collapsed overnight, like water bursting through a dam and causing the entire structure of concrete and steel to be torn asunder, and the pieces washed away in moments. This is the way tyrannical regimes fall. One minute, they seem unmovable, and the next, they are gone. And we live under a tyrannical, anti-white regime. And one day, that regime will collapse, and it will be swept away. And the big lie that underpins the regime that oppresses us today is the same big lie that underpinned those brutal communist regimes, which is, of course, the lie of equality. And just as it was with the Soviet Union, it won't be violence that brings the tyrannical regime that we live under to its end. It will be the truth. This tyrannical, multicultural, and diverse regime will be destroyed by an idea whose time has come. And that idea will expose that equality, diversity, and multiculturalism has failed. That idea, that truth, is that these lands are ours, and that we are the indigenous people of these islands, and that we shall not be reduced to a hated minority within our ancestral homeland. But before that day dawns, we must work hard. We must build a community that can stand together as a shield wall that will protect our people in the hard times to come. We must build a community that advocates for people of European descent, a community that legally defends those of European descent, and a community that upholds the rights of those of European descent. And that shield wall will be armed with the mightiest weapon of all, the truth. The truth about our history, the truth about our heritage, and the truth that it was our ancestors that fought and died for these lands. That it was our ancestors who tilled the soil and mined the stone. That it was our ancestors who created what we know as British culture. But more so, that our ancestors' achievements were not the result of some patch of magic soil that would gift such wonders to anyone who happened to sit upon it. Nor were the achievements of our ancestors the result of some all-knowing and wise wizard who taught those who came before us special ways that can simply be imparted to any person from any corner of the world who happens to wash up upon our shores. The ultimate truth is that what our people created was the result of something much deeper. What our people created came from within them, and it was unique to them. The ultimate truth is quite simple. Europe is the product of the European people, and our culture, our traditions, our heritage, and our entire civilization is bound to our blood. And after today, after we have enjoyed one another's company. We must go back to work. We must go back to building our communities with renewed vigor. We must go out and further strengthen and build what we have begun. For we must make sure that when this tyrannical regime does fall, when the dawn breaks on the day when our people are finally free, we must ensure that we are the ones there to claim that brave new world. We must build this nationalist community to ensure that above all else, tomorrow belongs to us.